We're going to talk about ants and beetles and the like. We've got a couple of folks from UConn here today, including Dr. Janine Kyra, Board of Trustees, Distinguished Professor in Ecology and Evolutionary Biology, and Scientific Collections Manager, Jane O'Donnell, to talk about ants and beetles today. I remember when I first met Janine, we were talking about parasites in sharks. And Janine, now you moved on to ants and beetles? How'd that happen?
No, like, let's not overstate this, Wayne. So, my passion is still for tapeworms. However,
Tapeworms and sharks.
Tapeworms and sharks, yeah. And sometimes stingrays, I must admit. However, at the university, I also have the role of the curator of the invertebrate collection, and Jane is the collections manager in that collection. And so that's a facility that was actually funded by UConn 2000, and we opened in 2003. So one of our jobs in running that facility is to take care of the creatures of the state beyond the tapeworms of sharks and stingrays. And so this collection, which came to us, and you know, hopefully we can talk a little bit about how spectacular the collection is our responsibility to, you know, we are the stewards of that collection for the state of Connecticut and actually also the world, because it's like an awesome collection. So, you know, I'm dabbling in army ants and their parasites.
Even though she doesn't like them.
I don't really like ants.
Yeah, you must like them because you studied them. That's why you're here today. By the way, let's set a definition here. You said curator of invertebrate collections. What is an invertebrate?
You know, the vertebrate people basically have resigned us to that category. And basically it means we basically look after all the specimens that aren't fish, birds, mammals, and herptiles. So basically it's things without a backbone. But that means it includes things like the parasites, the insects, lobsters, all the things you like to eat from the sea. What else, James?
Clams, little tiny things that nobody sees or cares about.
Tumble-up bugs. We could go on and on because there's like millions of them. So.
I thought a couple years ago Alex Rodriguez would have a backbone, but I guess we won't go there. All right, Jane, tell me about your role. I couldn't resist that one. It was way too easy. Jane, tell me about your role as the Scientific Collections Manager at UConn.
Well, I do a lot of the day-to-day operations. I take specimens in and organize them, and I mount and label them and train students in how to handle the specimens. And the good thing about collections work is that it's never done. There's always something to do, always something fascinating to learn from the specimens themselves. But it's also the bad thing because you're never done with your work. So,
so how many things do you have to catalog and be in charge of the collection
for?
Oh,
well, we're still working on that. Millions, with including all the army ants and all the little things associated with them. I'd say millions.
Yes, and army ants are part of our topic this morning. And Janine, you've got some kind of significant news here, a significant grant from the National Science Foundation.
Indeed. So Jane and myself and Bernard Goffinet, who's actually the director of the facility, put in a proposal to the National Science Foundation's Biological Research Collections Program for funds to transfer the Carl and Marion Rettenmeier ant guest collection into our facility. So when they decided to donate that to UConn, it was spectacular, because it is, in fact, we can talk about that in a little bit, but it's an amazing collection. And so we put in a proposal to do the full transfer, including cataloging, reviling, but also developing a very substantial online presence for it, because the idea is to share the data with everyone. And it also has a number of interesting outreach elements that we can maybe come back to. And we just found out on Monday that we were funded in full for the entire amount.
Yeah,
so
very, very exciting.
It's very exciting.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, you can talk about outreach elements now. What does that mean?
So all National Science Foundation proposals now are required to have what are called broader impacts, which is basically where the scientists putting in the proposals are mandated to come up with ways to share the results of their research with the public. Okay, and here's what in the natural history, you know, group of, you know, I would say the national community of natural history folks we're in a good position to actually do this, because what we do is so
cool
in terms of the public. So the two elements that we actually have formalized in the proposal, and we're hoping to actually move on beyond those, and we'll see, are as follows. So there will – so and I want to say we're partnering in this with the folks at the Museum of Natural – the Connecticut State Museum of Natural History, because there's no way Jane and I and Bernard could do this ourselves. So,
and Carl founded the museum.
Yeah.
So
it's perfect, right? So one of the things is we're going to have a 10-foot model of an army ant with its inquilines, and those are little creatures that live in intimate association with it. So, for example, there's a mite that lives between the little toe claws of the ant with its mouth parts sucking between the toe parts. And then the ant uses the hind legs of the mite as its own, like,
claws. Yep.
Right? So the model will have a number of those associated with it. And then there will be some sort of swath of army ants moving over to one of the display cabinets in that region. And then we're going to have details about the collection and what Carl and Miriam discovered. And so, for example, there's probably 200 species of creatures that are associated with army ants. 36 of those were named after the Rettenmeyers because they discovered them and then sent them off to experts. Okay, so that's one of the broader impact elements. Oh, wait, one other part. We thought it would be super cool to draw attention to the exhibit
if we
could put giant ants on the outside of the buildings that have the exhibit. So we actually had, you know, this is part of the budget of the grant, and NSF really liked this part because they're really interested in getting the public engaged in natural history. We're going to have giant ants on the outside of the biophysics building on campus, and then people will know that's where that exhibit is.
So when you talk outreach elements, you mean a way to bring this out to the general public so they realize what's going on with this ant project.
Yes, yes. Yes, because we're the only ones lucky enough to work with this collection every day, and it's such a unique resource that we really want to let not only the general public but researchers all over the world know about it. So part of the grant is to make sure that we make this available to those broader communities.
As the one that organizes the scientific collections, Jane, does this make a whole lot more work for you?
Yes. no cruising towards retirement here.
But
it's going to be
a lot
of fun, though.
Do these have to be reclassified? Or are there new things that we haven't had before that now have to be classified?
Both. It's going to add a huge number of species to the collection. But what we really want to do is make sure that these specimens last into the future, because there aren't enough trained taxonomists now, people who actually are capable of putting names on species and describing new species. So we want to make sure that these specimens last long enough so that eventually someone will be trained in these groups and they'll have the specimens still safe and still in good enough shape for them to work on.
Board of Trustees Distinguished Professor. What does that mean, Janine?
A number of years ago, the University of Connecticut Board of Trustees worked with the leadership on campus to come up with a designation for faculty members who have excelled in all three areas of our jobs at the university, so research, teaching, and service. And so there's a mandated percentage, there's a maximum percentage of faculty on campus who can have the designation. So generally each year, you know, depending on the number of people who already hold the title, you know, 1 to 4 individuals are selected for that designation.
And I would also add, knowing you as I have over the last 20 years or so, that you have a passion for what you do. And I don't know if that played a role in this at all, but I think that you help inspire students because of your passion for your work. Would that be accurate?
I would say.
Jane's nodding her head.
I would say yes, but I would also say, like, tapeworms are amazing. Like, I'm so happy and I'm sorry to the mathematicians, but if I had to teach math, I don't think it would be the same thing. But I get to teach parasites and evolution.
So. What if you had to catalog ants?
I don't do the cataloging, Jane does.
I know, that's why I said that. Yes, indeed. Yes, inside the biology and physics building and stores lies a biodiversity research collections room where nearly a million specimens are preserved, from polar bear skins to specks of bugs that make a flea look mighty. All are lovingly overseen by Scientific Collections Manager Jane O'Donnell, who shared these iridescent beetles, and there's pictures of these on the website. Pinpointed labels tell the story of each researcher who has attempted a bug identification, along with the date and place the specimen was collected. Jane, how did you get started doing this?
Well, I actually didn't want to go back to my hometown in Connecticut for the summer and work in the gun factory again.
What was the hometown?
Bristol.
Okay.
And I knocked on every professor's door before I left for the summer and asked if they had any work. And an entomologist had a job for an undergraduate that summer, and I had just taken entomology. And I just was hooked after that. I started working with specimens right away and identifying them and learning how to dissect them and their ranges and how they're related to each other. And I decided to pursue graduate work, and I ended up getting my degrees with the same person who hired me that first summer. And then I got my job as a graduate student, and I've been there ever since. I never thought I'd still be there 36 years later, but I still am. And it's still every bit as much fun as it was the first day. It's actually more fun now because we have the beautiful new facility, and we constantly get new things in. And now this will be sort of like the capstone to my career, is getting this Army Ant guest collection up to modern standards and institute best practices to make sure that it's preserved for future generations. So insects are so incredibly diverse and fascinating. You can take a trip anywhere by opening one of the drawers and in the collection and reading the labels and remembering if you were the person who collected that specimen, just when and where you were when that happened. So there's many, many aspects to working with insects that are really enjoyable. But I find the diversity and their beauty right at the top of the list.
If I stop by the office, could I see the million?
Sure.
So
sure.
By me, I meant the general public. Those things are available?
By appointment, okay. Yep.
And is there like a couple of things that you're really proud of? What are the coolest things you've got?
Well, I'm an insect taxonomist, so to me it's a species that I actually discovered in the rainforest. But I think most people would probably appreciate the beautiful showy butterflies more than the tiny little insect that I described. But that's my favorite. It has to be.
Insect taxonomist.
Yes.
What does that mean?
I study specimens, and I figure out, well, all insect taxonomists do, figure out what a species is. From dead, dried specimens, we look at a bunch of different characteristics, their size, their shape, their ratios of different body parts, and a lot of species still remain to be discovered in the insect world. So I do part of that with a specialized group of insects known as the true bugs. So I'm an expert on that group, and I can recognize species and tell whether or not they've already been described by comparing things in the collection and the vast amount of literature that's already been produced on these groups.
Janine, one of the significant things about this brand new National Science Foundation grant to work on the huge collection of army ants and the animals associated with the army ant raiding colonies is that I guess that some of your existing collection is beginning to deteriorate a little bit and needs a little bit of upgrade, so this will help in that field too, won't it?
Well, actually, the funding is for specifically to help with the Retmar collection. So because Jane's been working in the facility since it was built, and so the specimens that are in the facility are actually in pretty good condition, but the Rettenmeier collection actually resided in their basement until very recently. And fortunately, a person named Julia Joseph, who worked with the Rettenmeiers in the field, helped move it from the Rettenmeier's basement into the collection facility. But now those specimens, and like we've been saying, you know, there's 2,100,000 or something, they're in like vials where the ethanol level is low, the stoppers are poor. So the funding is actually specifically to help resurrect
specimens.
Yeah, for those specimens. So new vials, new labels, you know, and actually organizing. Like if someone said, you know, find larva Mima Mary and I to Jane, she would go, no.
See you next month.
Bye. You know,
we literally get long to find
we can't
it.
Find anything because it's not organized. It was just like, quick, move it from the basement into the facility.
There's gazillions of little tiny vials with little tiny labels and little tiny mites. So,
but just to give you some idea of like how meticulous Carl and Marion were, like those vials are literally like, I don't know, some of them are, I don't know, like 5 millimeters high, tiny little vials.
Yeah.
They have labels in them, like Jane said, and the labels actually have the number of individual specimens and their sexes in the vial.
Yeah.
Like the
they
data,
counted everything.
And one of the things about the collection that I think actually helped seal the deal with the grant is that they were so meticulous, because here's what their collection is. It's not just the specimens, but it's field, like 5,000 or 6,000 field cards. Every field card has the colony of the army ant and what they collected and when they collected it. It also has 5,000 Kodachrome slides. And when Jane and I, when we were working on the grant proposal, we actually went from a specimen in the collection to the field card where it was collected to a Kodachrome slide of that animal in the field. Like that, I mean, I'm an amazing collector. Jane's an amazing collector. You could never do that with our material. And so the connections are amazing.
Yeah.
So the other part of it is to make it so that the specimens are in the vials that we can't find or in places we can find them, but also then we can connect them to the Kodachromes and the field cards.
Now, when I forget to wash my dishes in the summertime, and not in the wintertime, but in the summertime, yeah, the little sugar ants come out. That's not what we're talking about here, right? When you talk about army ants. Where do I find an army ant, and what is an army ant?
Well, an army ant lives in Central or South America, the New World ones. There's some in Africa, but they're in a different group. And these are unique in the ant world. There's about 140 or so species of them, but you probably would never see them. Most of them live underground, and the nest they form is totally composed of ant bodies, and they call that a bivouac. And they get together and cling to each other, and then they go out and forage. The colonies can be so large, there are hundreds of thousands of individuals. They have to sort of migrate every day in a different direction to find food. They can eat up to a million insects a week. A single colony can do that. And eventually they sort of eat everything around their radius of their temporary bivouac, and then they emigrate to a new site. And so all these little things that live with the army ants have to go with the ants also. But they're nothing really like the ants that we have up here. They're a totally different system.
Now, I have been in Africa, and I have been out in the boonies, and I've seen these gigantic anthills. They're 2-3 feet high or so. Is that army anthills?
No, probably not, no. No, some of those are termites, but some of those are would be a different kind of ant. We have an ant here that makes a big sort of mound nest in the woods, but those aren't army ants. Army ants really have a unique biology consisting of these raids going out to forage for food.
So for the people that are waking up saying, why are we talking ants this morning? Well, Janine sent me this yesterday, quote, ants are so much like human beings as to be an embarrassment. They farm fungi, raise aphids as livestock, launch armies into war, use chemical sprays to alarm and confuse enemies, capture slaves, engage in child labor, exchange information ceaselessly. They do everything but watch television. My goodness. Could you expand upon that, Janine?
But I want to say this quote actually came from Leanne Hardy Kennedy, or Kennedy Hardy, at the museum when we were sort of thinking about expanding the broader impacts of the project beyond even what was in the grant. Because the university has sort of decided that it would be really cool to use the fact that we can learn a lot. I think people are, you know, we need to get the message out that we can learn a lot from the creatures of the world. They've developed solutions to things we don't even know are problems. And so the idea is that the connectedness of life of army ants and their various guests is a sort of a perfect vehicle for something we're hoping to launch at UConn with the Office of Public Engagement, and that is that we can take this grant, given what you just read and all that information and connectedness, to actually move forward with sort of three elements of outreach. So the history, which involves the second exhibit on the grant, which would be about the Rettenmeyers and their collecting, you know, sort of connectivity, and then the complexity of the situation. Because that's just the army ants. This is a quote from Lewis Thomas, and it doesn't say anything about the imquoins. The mites aren't there. Like, there are 500 species that live with one species of army ant, Eceton bertellii, that the Rettenmeyers worked on most carefully. Like, think about that. 500 species, and 200 of them are obligate? Obligate. And some of them, like, just to tell you, there are beetles that live with them. The beetles look like the ants. They mimic the ants. They run along in the raids with the ants. Some of them actually, like, lick the, you know, touch the ants, and they get, like, ant goop on them, so the ants think that they're actually ants.
Yeah.
And it's true, like, there's a bunch of organisms like that. The mites do that, too. Like, there's a mite, Larva Mima Marionai, is actually a mite that fakes being an ant larva. So when the ants move around in their bivouacs,
they pick it up?
Yeah, so because normally the big ants will pick up the larvae and move to the next bivouac site. They pick up the mite that's faking being an ant. And Marion discovered it when she realized, wait a minute, look at that army ant larva. It's got legs. And it turned out it wasn't an army ant larva at all. So the complexity is, like, amazing. So it's going to be, like, a cool, and some of the things we're going to try to do is connect, like, art and literature with the science involved. And so we're hoping to get, like, a bunch of groups on campus involved over the 3 to 4 years of the project, though, and we'll roll those things out. Leanne at the museum actually even came up with the idea of Mansfield, get it?
M-A-N-T-S.
We could actually do some outreach in downtown stores or something, but we're not sure of those elements. The two that are in the grant are the giant ant and the Rettenmeyer story.
Never thought about spelling Mansfield that way. You can't tell. What's the connection of beetles to this project?
Well, there are many species of beetles that live only with army ants. And Carl and Marion Rettenmeyer, over their 50 years of field work, were amazing in that they could find these things in all the jungle environments where the army ants live and emigrate. Some of the beetles live in the refuse deposits that the army ants create with all the crud that they don't eat and the dead bodies from their bivouacs and their nests. Some of them are much more intimately associated with the army ants. They crawl all over them. They kind of hang on them like a cowboy riding a horse. They have amazing lifestyles that are still being worked out, and modern techniques, which we hope this collection will help provide the material for, we can start to begin to associate the immature beetles, the larval beetles, with the adults. If you can imagine how hard it is to, first of all, find an army ant colony in the jungle, and then you have to find all these tiny little things that are moving along with them, even made even more difficult by the fact that some of them resemble the ants so closely. These beetles are just amazing. And some of them have been named for Carl Rettenmeier. I don't think a beetle's actually been named for Marion, but we have them in the collection. You can go and you can look at them, and it just reflects an unbelievable amount of work on the part of these two fabulous field biologists.
Who goes in the jungle and finds these giant army ants or these beetles and brings them back to Storrs, Connecticut, or, as you referred to earlier, Mansfield, M-A-N-T-S field?
Well, these particular ants and beetles were collected by Carl and Marion, and they devoted their lives to this. And they documented all the different species that live with one species of army ants, but we have representatives of many other species of army ants, and we hope that someone in the future will be able to tease out all the little beetles and mites that live with those colonies as well. And then we can compare how many species live with one species of ant versus another. But they were so meticulous in their field work. If you can imagine spending 50 years doing this in the hot, humid jungle, out at night, finding the colonies, following the colonies, it's really an incredible legacy.
And actually, I will say, so they actually produced two videos, one on the army ants and one on the army ant guests. And you can actually, we uploaded them to YouTube.
Yep, they're on our website.
Yeah, so on the collection's website, you can go in and see the links. And it's amazing. One is actually narrated by, I think the guest one is narrated by Carl, and the ant one is narrated by someone else.
Mark Roy, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, our former news director and my former roommate, Mark Roy.
There you go.
The now retired Mark Roy.
It's a small world.
Few people know more about UConn's history than Mark Roy. Jane, you mentioned little beetles in that last answer.
Mm-hmm.
How big do these things get?
Well, I think the better question is how small do they get?
Okay, that's the follow-up, yeah.
Oh, let's see. They're about 1/16 of an inch maximum, some of these things. Really small.
Oh, I was expecting something, you know, like 5-6 inches long.
But how big do the biggest beetles get?
The biggest beetles get probably 4 or 5 inches.
Okay, so that's where I was going.
Okay, sorry, I misunderstood.
And then we've used that phrase, giant army ants, and the first thing I thought of, Janine, when you were telling this story, was about a movie that I saw when I was growing up in Hollywood, California. The movie came out in 1954, and it was called Them, and it was about giant ants. Have you seen that movie?
I actually have seen that movie, and you know what's interesting? I grew up in Canada. That movie made it to Canada, but it did follow on the heels of that movie about the giant woman who ran through all the power. I forget what that one was called, but it was during the giant organism phase. But that's exactly what we're shooting for with the army ant broader impacts. We want that kind of an ant, but not live.
Well, the Wikipedia page on the 1954 movie calls it an American black and white science fiction monster film, the first of the 1950s nuclear monster movies.
Yes, there you go.
And the first big bug feature. A nest of gigantic irradiated ants is discovered in the New Mexico desert. They quickly become a national threat when it's discovered a young queen ant and her consorts have escaped to establish a new nest. The national search that follows finally culminates in a battle with Them, the name of the movie is Them, in the concrete spillways and sewers of Los Angeles. I'm a kid, and I'm watching this movie, and I live in Los Angeles. I had nightmares about that. I have nightmares about walking down the street and an ant pops out of the manhole or whatever the case is. So the ants you've got aren't quite that big and quite that dangerous.
Well, our model is going to be that big but not that dangerous. Ours is going to be a more informative model.
Where exactly is this 10-foot ant going to be?
So it's going to be in the lobby of the biophysics building, which is on North Eagleville Road, kind of just down from the cemetery. It's going to be
so people driving by on North Eagleville are going to see this 10-foot ant?
No, so they'll see the giant ants on the outside of the building, which are kind of, so we have the giant ants and the extra giant ants. So the extra giant ant is 10 feet. The ones on the outside of the building will be 4 to 5. And actually, Colin Hardy from the museum has actually already found a place where we can buy those. We're going to buy one hopefully in the next week or so. So we can work with facilities to get it on the outside of the building. So you could see, so the idea is that people would be able to see the ones on the outside of the building. And maybe they would stop and go in and see the exhibits.
Is that part of the grant too?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's the broader impact. I mean, that's what National Science Foundation is trying to do. They want to engage people in the science of the biology. And it's tricky, right? But ants are perfect. You read that quote. They do things we do better than we do them.
How soon will this be up? What's your timetable on when you think that the 10-foot ant is going to come out of the Los Angeles sewers and wind up on a building in stores?
Well, we aspire to do that exhibit. We're going to start. So the grant date start. The grant start date is May 1st. And Colin at the museum is already on working on the design for that. The idea would be that it will be up and ready to go within the first year. And then we'll do, we didn't get a chance to talk much about the Rettenmeier exhibit, but the second exhibit then will be about, it'll be sort of the Rettenmeier story. This is the second one that's actually funded by the grant. Because that's a remarkable story. Like, Carl published his first paper when he was 12 or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's remarkable. And that one's going to involve, just so you know, again, the museum folk helped us. So they found plastic ants that are about the size of army ants, and they calculated the area that a an army ant colony, like Jane said, is about 350,000 to, I don't know, 400,000 individuals. So they calculated how large that would be. So the Rettenmeier exhibit is actually going to involve little plastic 350,000 to 400,000 individual ants, so you can see what it is when they move. I mean, you've seen the I used to see the Tarzan movies where there were in Canada, where there were army ants moving along, eating everything, and the idea is to sort of reproduce that. Except that what we learned in putting the grant together is they might eat everything in their path, except to give them credit, you know, not vertebrates.
When this program is completed using the grant money, will you be also outreaching to maybe have schools come visit?
Okay, so listen to this. This is Jane.
I have to let the listeners know, there was a real body language before she said anything there. I get the answer is probably yes.
Well, this was Jane's idea, and it's brilliant. So, as usual, that's why we like working with Jane. So one of the neat things about the Kodachrome slides is there's a lot of information on the behavior of the ants in them. So the idea is that this year we're in collaboration with actually Jason Card from UIT, the IT folks at UConn on campus. We're developing a database so that we can digitize the Kodachromes and get them up online. And then next summer and the summer after, we're going to have Coda crews, this is Jane's term, of students who are going to come in and work with someone in the collection, and ideally we're hoping to bring in a couple of teachers with some museum money maybe, to actually look at the images, see what's happening, and then enter those data in the Kodachrome database online. And so there's lots of, you know, because this is all about, like, when we're done, all of this information has to be available publicly. And so we're thinking, like, especially if we can expand, you know, using, you know, working with public engagement on campus, we think there's, you know, a lot of opportunities where we can expand into schools, you know, and we're even thinking maybe the Rettenmeier exhibit would be a traveling exhibit. But we have, that's something we're still sort of trying to work out to see if we can reach out to the regionals or whatever. But there's lots of opportunities. I mean, the biology is phenomenal. It couldn't be more complicated, and it's so unexpected that it's the perfect venue. You know, it's the perfect system to be getting people interested in natural history and so on.
You should probably just say a few words, too, about Carl and Marion Rettenmeier. You've dropped their name in quite a bit today. Who were they, and they really seem to be the one that got this whole concept started at UConn?
Yes, they did. Carl was born in Connecticut and raised in Connecticut and went on to do graduate work in Kansas on army ants. And he started working with them for his PhD thesis and started documenting all the crazy little things that live with them. And it became his lifelong passion. And he met Marion, you know, who was also interested in insects. And it's a good thing because they were lifelong companions in the field and at home. And their legacy is truly an amazing one. He came back to Connecticut after teaching a short while at Kansas State University. He got his degree at the University of Kansas and taught for a number of years at Kansas State, and then the university hired him in the early 70s. I had him as an undergraduate instructor and a graduate instructor, and he was a great teacher and very inspiring. So,
and one of the things that's neat is Marion has been helping us with the proposal. So our hope is that when we design the, you know, the giant ant with the, you know, the mites that live associated with it, that we can help her. She'll actually help us in terms of being like a scientific consultant. So we've been trying to keep her appraised. I mean, I think she's a little overwhelmed by the scope of what we're doing.
We gave a little presentation to her about all the things that were happening with the outreach, and she just kind of sat there with her mouth open and her jaw dropping, because it's gone beyond what we even thought of when we originally wrote the grant. And I think she's just thrilled about that because of what it meant not only for her and Carl, but what it will mean for generations of scientists to come and students to come, because
You just got this grant 3 days ago, but Jane, when the project begins, what's the first thing you're going to do?
Have some champagne.
What's the second thing you're going to do?
Well, we're going to dive right in. We'll start working with the vials and the jars, and we'll hire some people and order some supplies and maybe get that giant ant up as soon as we can on the outside of the building. And then we'll start hiring our personnel. And we have a pretty detailed work plan that we submitted, and so we'll let that be our guideline.
And one of the keys to a project like this is, because it involves so many people, is we'll have regular meetings. So we're going to have we're trying to work with the university right now for the rollout of the concept in terms of, like, you know, how are we going to brand it? We have a couple of, I guess I shouldn't mention things like Aunt You, Colin came up with that idea. But we need to sort of get that organized. But pretty much, you know, we want to be poised and ready to go with exactly what the first step is going to be May 1st, but we'll sort of decide as a group what's most feasible, because the landscape is shifting a little bit as the university decides they want to be more engaged. But, I mean, there's not going to be a dearth of things to do.
Oh, no, we have plenty of work to do.
Now, we had Janine here about a year or so ago with Carl Splichting from the university's Department of Ecology and Evolutionary Biology, and at that point I was about 2 months off of having stent placement here, and both in the studio that day and then later with some emails, Janine was very aggressive with me about behaving and diet, exercise, all that kind of stuff. Janine, would you care to let the people know exactly what you brought me this morning as a gift for the host of the morning show here?
I got a giant package of baby carrots that, you know, has a Ziploc on it so that you can get in and out of it easily would be appropriate.
I'm eating them one little baby carrot right now. Can I share a baby carrot with you? I'd be happy to share a little baby carrot with you this morning. Well, Mom told me never talk with my mouth full, but special occasion today, so I will do it here. Janine, thank you for the carrots, and thank you for this update as to what's going on with the National Science Foundation grant, which you just got on Monday. These are tasty. To work on a huge collection of army ants and all the animals that are associated with the army ant raiding colonies. Interesting stuff this morning. Dr. Janine Cairo, Board of Trustees, Distinguished Professor in Ecology and Evolutionary Biology, and Scientific Collections Manager Jane O'Donnell, our guest this morning on 14 WILR.